You know what the best thing about having Ron Hextall as your general manager is?
He has a temper.
He is a prideful man.
Okay, explain.
Last night in the Flyers-Rangers postgame, myself and the other reporters, I'll put quotes around that because I was part of them, interviewing Steve Mason, who was the only Flyer worth a damn in that 2-0 loss against
great.
The Rangers.
He was really,
he was
good.
Really great. Yeah, he was and I was actively getting angry during the game that he wasn't, that they weren't playing for him. I mean, it was just, it was a dead performance, lifeless, no pushback, no momentum building. The only time they had a spark was in the last minute of the game. So we're interviewing him, and all of a sudden we hear this glorious cacophony of F-bombs and Jesus Christ and embarrassing and things being thrown. Yeah. And out emerges from the changing room.
Hang on, things being thrown? Wait a minute, what?
It sounded like things were being slammed. Doors.
Oh, okay.
One of the reporters there thought a waste paper basket might have been tossed.
Okay, that's the standard. Come in and kick the trash can.
Yeah. Not a stick.
Okay, so no sticks were being, no helmets were being thrown around the room.
Out comes Ron Hextall. Derry goes through another door, slamming it behind him. Steve Mason's head jerks around to see what the hell's going on. It's great, by the way, to think that like the only player worth a damn gets sent out to talk to the media while everybody else in the team gets admonished. This is a perfect scenario.
Yeah, you know, quick little story. I remember talking to someone from the LA Kings in like the 92-93 era, and Barry Melrose would come into the dressing room and he would tear a strip off. Like, he would go person to person if they had a bad game and tear a strip off of everybody but leave Gretzky out of it. Like, he would never go
really?
He would never go at 99. And here's, this just adds to the legend of Wayne Gretzky. One time in front of everybody, might have even been more than one time, Wayne Gretzky stood up and said, "Hey, I was shit that game too. If you're going to go at everybody, go at me too, Barry."
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Nice.
Yep, that's right.
So, listen, we've all had coaches and GMs lie to our faces before.
No.
It happens.
No,
it's true. It's true. It happens.
Oh, and
that's quite all right. That's completely okay. You know, some stuff has to stay inside the room.
But when there's a smoking
as
gun.
As they say. But here's the thing, right? Like, this is the general problem. When you're there and the guy's ranting at the team and he bursts out of the room and he knows at this point two facts. One, the media is assembled a mere couple feet away from where the yelling just happened. Two, the walls of that room are not double-plated titanium. Everything has been heard.
Yeah.
Now, you got a choice now. You got a choice on what you want to do. You're either going to lie and just try to figure out a way to pretend it never happened, or you're going to do that with a wink. You got the audio?
I think Maddie's got the audio. All right, Maddie.
All right,
go
ahead, Matt. This is from my recorder while talking to Steve Mason last night. Give a listen.
Head hurt a little bit. I was felt fine right after I got up, and you know, it is what it is.
This game reminds you of all games.
So that gives you a good perspective. We're all there talking to Mason, and you could clearly hear what's happening in the background.
Now, if Mason was a good goaltender, he could try to make the save on that one. Just start talking really loudly to try to drown it out, so no one could hear it, and just start filibustering. La da 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 da. Nothing to see here. That's not my general manager and a fellow goaltender.
What, and ruin the first positive coverage he's gotten in 3 years?
I was going to say. Hey, man, no, Mason was real good last year.
I know. Listen.
All right.
So you got two choices now if you're Ronnie Hextall. Yeah. You can either lie and be a prick about it, or you can lie and be nice about it. Now, there were times back in the days when...
How about laugh about it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
When
Bruce Boudreau was the head coach of the Capitals, and he would light up the team as he often would, because he had good reason to. We'd ask him about it, and he would, you know, he would just either confirm it and say what's what, or sometimes he'd just play coy about it. And so Hextall last night said something that in print probably seemed like it was coy. In print he said, "I can neither confirm nor deny that that happened." Now that's kind of funny. That's kind of glib. But
when
here's
it, you know what? Here's my motto. When in doubt, do Japanese goldfish.
Okay, but here's the thing.
Japanese goldfish, play coy. Thank you.
But here's the thing. That's all well and good.
Yeah.
But when you look like a serial killer when you're saying that line, like Hextall did last night, I swear to God, like it was the most one of the most awkward conversations I've ever been a part of in my coverage of hockey. Because not only was this guy bullshitting you, and everyone knows he's bullshitting, he knows he's bullshitting.
Yeah.
But he's doing it in a way that is so threatening and so not whimsical or anything. Like, he's doing it in a way that chilled the room. Like, no one had a follow-up. One, because they were all flabbergasted that he outright lied. But two, because we were genuinely afraid of what would happen if we called him on it.
So no
it
one
was
said,
amazing.
No one said anything? Like,
no hey, one really. Hey, everyone just said,
"Ron, we kind of heard you, bud."
No one actually came out and said we heard you.
You're throwing Gatorade bottles around, a couple of JCs and a couple of F bombs. Like, guy, what gives? It's okay. We've all been angry, and he's not the first general manager to kick over a trash can and knock some hockey sticks loose.
No,
it's okay.
But holy smokes, man, was that awkward? That was an awkward one last night.
Stuff.
But here's the thing, right? Like, I hope nobody out there confuses the, wow, I can't believe Ronnie Hextall stonewalled us with, wow, how dare he say that to us. I mean, like, they deserved it. And it's the embarrassment that comes from that happening for Hextall is twofold. One, he bleeds orange and black.
Yeah.
And for him to see that team go to Madison Square Garden, wear the orange and black, and play that shittily against the Rangers has got to make him mental. Two, no general manager wants to have to be the guy that has to go down to the locker room on November 19th and say that to his team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's November 19th.
Yeah.
You need the GM. The GM has to come down? The GM?
But Greg, what have we always talked about? What magical date is approaching when the first audit is done on any team?
December 1st? Or Thanksgiving, or American Thanksgiving.
There you go, as we call it up here, American Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's I know. I'm trying to be better with that. I'm trying to be better with that. Simply not just calling it Thanksgiving, like the rest of the world probably does.
You have to be Canadianist about it. Oh, it's American Thanksgiving.
Yeah, or not be a prick about it and just call it, you know, American Thanksgiving, and not call yours fake Thanksgiving. That's a good thing too, right?
Premature Thanksgiving is what we have.
Ooh, you don't want that to happen. No, you won't be given thanks for that. Let me tell you. Ooh, boy,
no one's coming back after that.
So there was that, and of course, if you want to read all the Claude Giroux injury stuff, that's on Puck Daddy too.
Okay, that timeline's goofy.
48 hours of stupid.
Has there been any more clarity? Has there been a flashlight shined on that yet?
No.
None. We're still foggy mirror on that one?
The one theory I love, by the way, here's the X-File on this, okay?
Okay, I'll get Fox.
Okay, there's forces that we don't understand, Skelly, forces greater than us. Here's the X-File on it.
Yep.
Giroux didn't want to attend the season ticket holders event, so the Flyers ginned up an injury. Then he actually got hurt in practice. So it's like the boy who cried sprained ankle.
Actually got a sprained ankle. Self-fulfilling.
Do you like that? I like that theory a lot. That they faked an injury so he wouldn't have to go to a season ticket holders event. And then he actually got hurt, and they didn't know what to do, and then they ginned up a whole story and the whole thing. By the way, the funniest thing that happened last...
The limousine part was hilarious.
Well, okay. Yeah, the funniest thing that happened last night for me was at the end of Giroux's interview, you know, he's walking away, and I'm like, one last thing. Like, did you really take a limo from Philadelphia to New York? And he's like, where'd you hear that?
Your coach?
And I'm like, and here's the thing. I forgot that it was Berube who said it. Berube said that he took a limo from Philly to New York to play in the game. It was Berube who said that. But all I remember was like reading it on Twitter. So I didn't know if it was like a beat writer making a joke or if it was an official guy who's saying it. I couldn't remember.
Right. Okay.
So I said to Berube, he's like, ah, where'd you hear that? I'm like, the Twitters. And he goes, ah, well, you better check your sources then, huh? Okay. So like in the moment, it's like now, like, and I wish I had the DeLorean to go back in time and be like, yeah, my source was your coach.
Coach told everybody.
What a weird ass game. The post game was so much more interesting than the actual game, because that actual game was dog shit, yeah, wasn't it?
It was boring, is what it was. It was just a snooze. And listen, man, when there's only two games on the sked. Have a good game. Have an exciting game because everyone's watching.
Now the other game was really interesting, but let me ask you about the thing that pissed me off about the Oilers game. Okay.
What's that?
Because I don't know the answer to this, and maybe you do, because you were in a lot of meetings with NHL brass before the season. They were talking about all the kind of stuff they were going to do this season, okay. Like disciplinary-wise.
Mm.
Are they going to go after goalies for diving? Like, will they give Scrivens a warning for what he did on that Burrows play? Or is it going to be a thing where anything that happens inside the crease will be exempt?
It seems as if, and I don't know anything specifically. I can make a call and find out. Where they're more concerned with the players diving, I think, than
right.
the goaltenders diving. Now, it will become an issue, right? Because, listen, at the end of the day, referees don't want to be embarrassed by anybody, whether it's a defenseman, a left winger, or a goaltender. Now, there are some goaltenders, and Carey Price is the best at it, who know how to, wink, wink, get position and stumble strategically to draw penalties and have goals waved off. He's great at it. I mean, players, no matter what stripe you wear, no matter what position you play, will always look for an advantage and look to curry favor with the officials. I don't think it's as egregious in the referee's eyes as it is when a player dives when he feels a little tug on his pants. It's a good question, though.
No, I'm going to guess that they think the stuff inside the crease can be dicey. Like, even when you see the overhead on the Burrows play last night.
It's tough to make a call around the
crease.
It's hard to make a call around the crease.
The overhead on it shows that it's a little bit of a, unless his ass is made of flubber, there's no reason Scriven should flop back like that. But, you know, overall, on a lot of those plays, it is tough to kind of tell. And that's one of the arguments against the coach's challenge.
Yeah, it comes back to a discussion you and I have had since the beginning of this podcast. Where is the line?
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody embellishes, but what's the line between them? When does an embellishment become a dive? Because so many things in the game are embellished. Tons.
Yeah.
Tons of things are embellished.
The problem I have, like, even if we want to cut him a break on those plays, I like to call those plays in which a goaltender flops in his own crease to curry a call, that's the Chris Osgood special. Ozzy was a master at that. Just a master at that. Although sometimes he'd also do it on the side of his net when he was trying to play the puck. Now, those are different than what I would call the Mike Smith special, which is my bones and muscles have collapsed and I have fallen behind the net in a heap situation that happens a lot.
I'm trying to think of who is the sort of master at it. I mean, everybody really has. Although, you know what? Here's what I wish would happen. You know, much like once upon a time, players, when they felt a tug on their hip from a stick, they would bend their knees and try to skate through it. I know we don't want to go back to water skiing, but I really did like that. I liked that effort, knowing you weren't going to get the call, so you had to try to fight through a check. Now, it got ridiculous. It got to the point where it was stupid. But who's the last goaltender? Maybe the answer is Dwayne Roloson, who really protected his crease violently.
Oh, that's a good question.
Right? Roloson took no crap.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he would punch in the back. He didn't care. Chop you down. He's old school. Wouldn't you like a return to that?
Giving
goaltenders a free pass to chop guys down in front who are in on their crease as opposed to having to fake a little bump and draw a penalty?
Would you rather have
goalies defending their blue?
I'm going to tell you right now who I think defends the blue better than most. Jonathan Quick.
Yeah?
Jonathan Quick might be the last of the goaltending pricks. He might be the guy that carries that mantle. I really think so.
Maybe, but Roloson, though. Roloson was, I mean... He lived two doors down from Billy Smith when he played.
I don't know. Billy Smith, by the way, being honored by the Islanders this Saturday.
Saw that, yeah.
Yeah.
Loved Billy Smith.
Oh, my God.
Now, how many, you have to go to hockey, you can go to hockeyfights.com for them, but I remember him as a kid. He would we all make a big deal about, Ray Emery fought Josh Gratton, Ray Emery fought Andrew Peters. I mean, I grew up watching Billy Smith fight players all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it wasn't a thing. Like, he got mad. He didn't look for Denny Potvin or Clark Gillies or, you know, take your pick from that really tough Islander team, Gary Howitt. He didn't look for anyone to fight his battles.
Yeah.
He got pissed off. He dropped his gloves and he fought.
Bob Wyszynski's favorite player, by the way.
Billy Smith,
yeah.
The best part about that was, like, normally when you see the goalie fighting, people, you know, if it's close and there's a bunch of players around, they'll try to get in the middle and stop it. But when Billy started throwing, Islanders players would back off. Like, it's like, oh shit, he's going. Like, we're just gonna back, just gonna back off. Love Billy Smith.
All right. Listen, you may be wondering why we haven't addressed the story of the day. That's because we've got the guy who wrote the story of the day coming up on the podcast.
Yeah.
That would be Aaron Portsline, who has knocked out just two out of the park home runs in like the last month with the Nathan Horton story and now the Jack Johnson story. For those who haven't read it yet, or maybe you're listening to this podcast and haven't been checking the news, Jack Johnson filed for bankruptcy last month, and he filed for bankruptcy because his parents borrowed a substantial, and the debt load is reportedly $15 million, a substantial amount of money against the contract that he had and his future earnings. He's been part of three different lawsuits, and as a result of one of them, for the last 2 years with the Blue Jackets, has had his wages garnished, money out of each check taken away to repay the debt. It's a crazy ass story, and it follows in the heels of Ryan Howard, the big MLB slugger, being in the same kind of financial strife situation with his family. But this one's more just abjectly getting robbed by the people that you trust and love, and we're going to talk to Portsy about that. It was a knock you on your ass, I can't believe this is happening kind of story. It makes sense once you see that he dumped Pat Brisson and decided to give his parents power of attorney over his career, basically. Like, it makes sense then, but you just wish that there was somebody out there professionally or a friend or somebody to say, dude, you're rich enough to hire people to take care of this shit for you.
It's so hard to talk to people about money, though.
It is.
Honestly, I mean, I don't do it with friends. It is so hard to talk to, and especially when family's involved. Like, honestly, Wish, how can you convince someone other than when it slaps you in the face and you realize, you know, you don't have money to go grocery shopping? Like, how do you talk to a friend about not only their finances, but how their parents are handling it?
Yeah.
It's near impossible.
It really is.
It is impossible. Because if someone came up to you and said, hey, your dad, Bob Wyshynski, the guy who loved Billy Smith, yeah, the guy that's handling your money, yeah, he's screwing you. What would your first instinct be? Back off, that's my family.
That's right. That's right.
How do you do it?
Aaron Portsline's going to join us in a sec to talk about this story. It's a hell of a story, and we really appreciate him coming on because I'm sure he's gotten more than one request today. With that, if we have time, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Then, as it must to all men, death came to
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
I'm going to lay down.
Wow.
My burden.
Wow.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
By the way, folks, you know, when there's a really bad situation or a negative situation in the world, the healthiest thing to do is treat it with humor.
Down by the riverside.
Yeah. Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
I've always said to people, I said, when my time comes, man, just have a party. Just do a good thing. Do it New Orleans style.
Lay down my
foolish
down
by the riverside. Wow. Oh, my
Love
goodness.
It.
Thank you, Mark Cole, for giving us
Indeed.
The New Orleans-style funeral that we so deserved and requested.
I like that.
On yesterday's show.
Citizen Kane drop in there to kick it off, too. Nice touch. Wow. Mark Cole, bringing high heat.
Charles Foster Charles Merrick.
God, that
Xanadu.
Was funny.
Xanadu.
Rosebud. Don't believe what I told them to believe. God, do I love that movie.
Wow. It's fantastic. Well, that movie you've seen. You call it Citizen Kane.
Too black and white. I'm just catching up on my talkies now. What do you mean they have color? They have color now?
Oh, God. What was your So do you take sympathy on the Jack Johnson thing?
100%.
Do you think that he's old enough to not do this?
No, I take complete sympathy on Jack Johnson. 100% take sympathy because I can, not that it's right, but I can see where agents have absconded with money. I can see where hangers-on have absconded with money. I can't wrap my head around stealing from your children. I can't. I have two sons who are both going to play in the NHL. One's going to be drafted in 2028. The other's going to be drafted in 2030. And me and their mom are going to have a nice little cottage on Lake Rosso or maybe Lake Joe if they want to go cheap on us. Thanks very much, kids. But I can't imagine, other than, you know, demanding cottages and cars, I can't imagine stealing money from our kids.
All right. Well, we take this break from crazy hockey dad ranting to bring in a man who wrote the story of the day, maybe the week, maybe the month, maybe the season. Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch is a friend of the show and
yes.
And wrote the Jack Johnson piece this morning. Hey, Aaron, first off, congrats on the story. It's an amazing and well-reported piece. This morning with Doug McClain on their radio show, he seemed to believe that this financial stuff with Jack Johnson had been kind of leaking out here and there over the course of a year. Is that, I mean, when did you catch wind of all this stuff? Has it been reported elsewhere, or is this the first time the shit's hit the fan?
Well, thanks for having me, guys. We first caught wind of it last spring. To be honest with you, I can't remember if it was during the Pittsburgh series or shortly thereafter, and did some public records searches and found more than we expected to find, and probably could have written a story then that would have been just a very straight legal story. He is being sued and these are the debts, but we just felt, you know, at that point that the story wasn't so much the death, but the why. Like, why in the world is an NHL hockey player making $3-4 million a year? Why is he borrowing $3 million at 24%?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, what the hell is going on here? And if you think horrible thoughts, you're thinking these aren't just bad, you know, wayward financial decisions. My God, something horrible is going on here. So we waited and kind of dug around a little bit. And yeah, there were whispers, people who had heard this or a little bit of that. I think for us, what began to crystallize it was when he sued his advisors in September, and when he filed for bankruptcy, the picture became a lot clearer. And then people who were reluctant to talk were suddenly more willing. And there were other people who came into the picture at that point because he changed the people around him, if you will, and they've begun seeking, you know, sunlight and a corrective approach here. The running, the hiding is done. Jack sort of put his wallet on the table and signed his financial surrender and hopes that a new direction has now been forged.
Now, there have been a number, when something like this comes out, like your piece, you know, there always are a number of people who will come out and say, well, I knew about this and I knew this was going on. And I've hinted at this for a long time. And Gare Joyce has been banging this drum since his book Future Greats and Heartbreaks has come out and said, listen, I've dealt with the father before. This isn't exactly a surprise. I'm not sure how much or how many dealings you've had with the Johnson family, mom and dad, but did it surprise you, Aaron?
Well, it did. I mean, there have been whispers about the family, just more from what I've heard, just odd behavior, just sort of uncomfortable behavior, the father dancing during the second intermission, thankfully with his shirt on, not like the guy here in Columbus, but stuff that would make, you know, a player sort of like, come on, Dad, what are you doing, you know, what's up with that? Just always around, maybe helicopter parents at a lot of games, but it surprised me because you're not expecting the financial distress to be this profound. The fact that Jack got rid of his agent early on, a very respected agent at Pat Brisson, that's troubling, especially that he didn't replace him. You know, the kid does not have financial wherewithal. He's got a $30 million contract. He should have an agent. Yeah. He should have a financial advisor. So, but to see the numbers laid bare, yes, it was surprising, even given what you knew.
The problem with all of it, too, is there's really nothing that the Columbus management or even the NHL Players Association can do. Like, all you can do is advise. You can't hold a person's hand and say, no, mom and dad shouldn't be looking after the money here. There should be someone else who has, you know what I'm getting at, Aaron? Like, there's really nothing that can be done here, is there?
I don't know. And I don't know the full breadth of the rookie symposiums that they do. I do know that in a lot of cases, those symposiums are seen by young people as a really good nap spoil, if you know what I'm saying.
Like, yeah, 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 yeah.
Get this thing over with. I don't know that and I'm not putting this on the PA, I'm truly not, and I'm not putting this on agents, some of whom may be reluctant to do this, but, you know, when you look at some of the model setups around the league, and I use him as, he's probably the superstar that I know best and longest, Rick Nash, and we did a story on him a few years ago. He had an agent, he had a financial advisor, and he had an accountant, and the three of them watched each other. It's how the U.S. government is supposed to work. Checks and balances. And no one, and it's not that he doesn't trust any of them individually, but he loves to have them working all together as a group. And other players in the Blue Jackets are going to set it up in similar ways. And to me, that is what should be promoted as the norm. And any agent or any financial advisor who is uncomfortable with his athlete seeking a financial advisor or an agent is, to me, similar to a doctor not wanting someone to seek a second advice. If you've got nothing to hide, you should hands up, let him go. Yeah. I think it's the way to go.
The only point that I was trying to make there, though, Aaron, is there's only so far you can go with a player when the family's involved. I mean, I think of Alexander Ovechkin. You know, when Don Meehan did all that work to bring him over and all the sort of groundwork that he did to bring Ovechkin to America and to the Washington Capitals. I mean, he was dismissed by Alexander Ovechkin, and in came his mom to oversee everything in conjunction with a lawyer friend. So when there's family involved, like, the PA can't intervene, the Blue Jackets organization can't intervene. You know how hard it is, not just for players, but for anybody. I was just talking to Greg a second ago here before he came on. Like, I have a hard time talking to people about their money unless they initiate it with me. Like, I can't walk up to someone and say, you know what, I don't think you're being the smartest with your money here. Like, it's a really sensitive issue, and it gets even more sensitive when there's family involved.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I just think there needs to be a new norm. There needs to be the more that these stories get out, players need to see a certain new norm that you have people around you, that it is worth the money, that you can go fee-based money management rather than, you know, a person that you just turn everything over to blindly. A lot of these guys meet up with agents at 15, 16 years old, and the agents become second parents, or they become older brother types to them. They trust them implicitly to the point where the player, A, they don't know the questions to ask, but B, if they do, it's an uncomfortable question to ask, because what are you insinuating with that question? Well, of course I've done this, I've done that. Well, if you're uncomfortable asking an agent that, how do you ask your parents that? The very question is offensive and disruptive to the relationship. And those are the sort of things that people prey upon.
Hey, Aaron, you mentioned something in the story that I got to admit that I'm not too familiar with as someone who's not really following a lot of these stories as intently as I probably should. But the idea of monetizing a contract was something I was sort of unfamiliar with, but it's something that's hit a lot of athletes, not only Jack Johnson, but also Vince Young, I think, was the name that was out there too. What's monetizing a contract mean?
Well, let me give you the sell point, okay? You just signed a contract for $20 million, and I come to you and say, well, you shouldn't have to wait for that money. I'll wait for the money, okay? I'll give you the money, all of your money up front, as much of it as you want up front, and then you pay me back when you get the money. I'll wait for your money so you don't have to, right? And it's only going to cost you 4%, all right? So that sounds great. Why wouldn't I do that? Of course. Well, maybe the 4% isn't 4% annually. Maybe it's monthly, which is 48%, okay? And so this is the sales job that's put on these guys. And a lot of these guys, I don't think this applied to Jack. It may have to his parents. A lot of these guys, the NFL guys, NBA, NHL, they get their paycheck, and sometimes they're a little underwhelmed by that first paycheck, because 40% of it's gone to the government for taxes, right? And they're like, whoa, and it's divided by 24. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a nice paycheck. It's more than a lot of us will get, but it's not enough to buy a house, a Ferrari, and a cottage all at once.
Right.
Yeah, that's not how it's supposed to work. But now here comes, you know, a guy in a really nice suit who works with this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, and this guy. And he's telling you he can get you the money up front. And all you got to do is give him future paychecks. Well, that you can get your toys now. Get your toys now. And you can pay for them later. I'm your friend. And this is what monetizing is. You talk to any reputable agent, and the one that I quoted said, never, never, never do that. It's the worst scheme ever. Unfortunately, it is not illegal. And so the people who pull these things off, and they almost always end up with the person who monetized his contract going broke. They don't face prosecution, or they haven't broken any laws. It's them preying upon people who don't have any financial background.
Are you surprised?
And that, friends, is why hockey players are raging fiscal conservatives. Maybe not social conservatives, but raging fiscal conservatives politically.
And part of me too. There are a number of exceptions. The people that got involved in the golf course with Len Berry, a lot of NHLers lost a lot of money in that resort. One player who had to shelled out, I think, something like $11 million. Ended up shoveling down the drain. Remember what happened to Mike Modano? Brian Berard is another story that's out there. Are you surprised, Aaron, that not specifically involving parents, but now that we're starting to see, and this all really started in the dot-com economy when players really started to make large bank, like the envy of other sports, are you almost surprised that this doesn't happen more often, that guys get taken for a ride? Or, here's another one, do guys get taken for a ride but then are too embarrassed to say anything about it?
I think it's the latter. I really do. I think a lot of guys get taken, and they don't want to say anything about it, or it gets stopped before it gets too out of control.
Right.
I think that's there. I think, you know, there's a component to this that doesn't really affect the NHL. There's a lot of kids, especially NBA type players, and the documentary that ESPN did broke, I think, touched on this rather well. There are a lot of kids that grow up with whose parents don't have financial experience. They don't trust banks. They don't go to banks. Yeah. And suddenly here's a $24 million payday. And the idea of taking that money and giving it to somebody you don't know is absolutely absurd. And so it was a guy with the Cleveland Browns, who got a huge paycheck. Signing bonus, no idea what to do with the money. Wasn't going to give it to somebody he didn't know at a bank and expect to get the money back. Didn't know how it worked. He bought six cars. Six cars, which is the worst investment you can make if you've ever bought a car, right? And that's how he decided to get to use his cash to put it into you know, articles that made it not cash. And it's really sad. I think the NCAA has a huge responsibility here to educate. It should be part of the degree. If you're going to school to be a professional athlete, you should take a course in being a professional athlete. And this is a side of it. You don't have to know everything there is to know about money. Just know what's out there. Hire people. Put people in charge of your money that have reputations, good reputations, and track records to take care of it.
Either that, Aaron, or just every 2 weeks, go to the hardware store, buy tin cans, put your money in it, and bury it in the backyard.
Detail a map so you know where to
find
it.
That's right. Yeah, tattoo a map somewhere on your body so you know where to find
tin cans. Aaron, I got two quick ones, and then I'm done. The first is, in your experience in this great game of ours, do you think something like this would be off limits to an opposing player on the ice? Or do you think this is something that Jack's going to have to hear about incessantly?
Can I answer too? Because I think Aaron and I might be on the same page.
Everything's on board. Yeah.
It'll be
mentioned.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. Every scrum. Absolutely. Yeah.
And the
only really, really profoundly sad things. Someone passing away, a child being sick. Maybe that's off limits. This kind of stuff. Absolutely.
And the other question is, I don't know what your relationship with Jack Johnson is as far as beat reporter and player, but was there any hesitation in writing this knowing that this relationship will fundamentally change? Or is it a case where you know as soon as the bankruptcy filing happens, this is all going to be coming out anyway?
I think the last part was understood by Jack. As much as it was by me that this is coming, and I mean he didn't sit down for an interview. We didn't talk long at all. It's part of the job sometimes, and it's not easy. That, you know, there's no good way to approach this. So, you know, if we may make light of it, I'm sure Jack someday would giggle about it too. You walk up and you're like, hey Jack, boy, the power plays, you know, 2 for the last 11. That's really coming along. Hey, Jack, I wanted to ask you about your bankruptcy. I mean, there's no good way in. Right? There is no good way in.
Yeah.
And so there's that moment of like, oh God, like, whoa. Yep. And he said, I don't want to talk about it. And I said, okay, listen, I understand that. I don't personally care to write about it. These are not the things I got into the business to write about. Here's what we know. I don't want to write this without you having a chance to defend yourself. These are lawsuits against you. They don't paint you in the best light. That's obviously the nature of a lawsuit. And I will write it without your input, but I'd rather not, and here's an opportunity. And he said, you know, very basic, I've surrounded myself with the right people, and they're going to fix things, and I should have done it years ago. And that was the extent of it. You're not here to make friends. I think the players in the room respect that. The feedback I got from guys in the room, there was a little chirping this morning, as there always is. That's how these guys communicate sometimes. But overall, it was fair piece. Hated to read it because that's a brother of mine. Mm-hmm. But fair and, you know, whatever. I don't think the relationship between Jack and I, frankly, we're not buddy-buddy. I don't care to be. It's never been even particularly conversational and loose. It's always been fairly stilted. It's just how he is. I don't think it's irreparably harmed. But you know, we'll see. I think he understands the situation.
And last one here, Aaron, and echoing what Greg said off the top, great research, great journalism, and a really well-done piece. We know about John Davidson a number of things. One is that he is the master at handling media, enjoys the microphone, enjoys the camera. But is there anything that John Davidson can do, will do on behalf of the Blue Jackets organization to try to manage the story?
You mean in terms of how much it's written about or covered, or
just in order to protect the player? Like when there are situations where, you know, the player could be, you know, vulnerable or in a vulnerable position or a little bit fragile. We think of Bob Gainey when, you know, Patrice Brisebois was getting booed out of Montreal, and he said, listen, if you're coming to boo in my rink on my players, don't come. I don't want you to come here to see the Montreal Canadiens. You think John would in any way try to get out in front of the story somehow on behalf of the CBJs?
You know, their response so far has been that to pass along that Jack does not want to speak about it.
Right.
I don't think the team is going to have any official word. Obviously, they have been there has been some involvement below the level, just I think in pointing him in the right direction, or at least surrounding him, standing beside him in this. They're not going to turn him loose to the wolves. He was in the room today, but it was made clear that he wasn't going to talk about this. I think they wanted the story to be over with. I don't think they were unhappy with the way it was portrayed, but I think they're ready for it to
right.
to pass, with an understanding that there's going to be some fallout here. You know, the other thing too is I have to take a step back and think of the humanity and just like what this team has been going through with Nathan Horton, with
yep.
Jack Johnson. Everybody in the room knew about this. Everybody knows about Nathan Horton, the injuries. There's been other stuff behind the scenes with ancillary people, not players, that has been, it's just been a really, really difficult stretch for these guys, for getting the actual play on the ice. And they're waiting for this, the sun to come up here and for things to turn around.
Aaron Portsline, thanks for making all this time for us, man. I know it was probably a busy day for you. Hope that Canadian station that wanted me to talk about your story eventually got in touch with you.
It's a great world.
I know that was kind of awkward.
I got a text earlier that said, "Oh my God, did you see NBC's story about Jack Johnson?" the way the world works.
Bloggers be blogging, Aaron. You know how it works. All right, buddy. Thank you so much for your time, man. Great work.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Great job, Aaron. Great job.
By
the way, he's going to get chirped hard for a while.
I put this thought out there earlier today, and I don't know if it has any traction or even factual relevance. Do you think it's possible that they left him off Team USA because they knew all this shit was in the background?
I heard you mention that on Hockey Central this afternoon. I like to snuggle up on the grassy knoll as much as anybody else, but I'm not sure if I'm picking up what you're putting down on that one.
All right, well, let me bring it down a few notches.
Okay. Simple it up for me. I'm a dumb guy.
When we talk about the National Hockey League putting a franchise in Las Vegas,
Isn't this one of the concerns? Not necessarily that a guy is going to gamble his life away, but that a guy is going to be in a situation where he might need to make up a lot of cash in a hurry. Like, isn't this one of the concerns? For potential hinkiness?
Yeah. Look, like, the optics of a sports team in Las Vegas aren't great.
No.
They're not. But I'm just not so sure that this would have been too big of a distraction in Sochi had it come out. I mean, he was living with it already. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, and if they thought that, I mean, if it had affected his play, that would have been obvious and that would have been part of the decision. But I don't think the decision would have been, there's a story that might drop here on Jack Johnson. Well, let's stay away. He might be radioactive.
I remember in Vancouver when the Bobby Ryan stuff resurfaced about his family. And that became at least a 1 day or two day story.
Yeah.
And that was stuff that was already out there. And I just wonder if, like, Team USA defenseman declares bankruptcy or owes $15 million because of his parents' mismanagement. Mm. It's not a distraction per se, but it could be. I don't know. It's just something that it wasn't reported by either Allen or Burnside, so I'm sure it wasn't discussed, but sort of in the back of my mind on that.
Yeah, I don't know.
QOD stuff, but I got a jet soon, but you have a big announcement to make, which you can make after I jet.
Yeah. How dare, what are you cheaping on the fans today, leaving after 45 minutes? Who do you think you are, me?
You. Yeah. Ryan Thomas writes in, my initial thought on the Jack Johnson story was utter disgust that a parent could do that to their child. Then when I pulled up Twitter, things got worse because it turns out this was low-hanging fruit for the sociopaths on hockey Twitter that don't know what it feels like to get dicked over by a family member. I feel for Jack, and I wouldn't wish this on anyone, even a pro athlete that makes millions of dollars.
I'm with that same comment. I have nothing but sympathy for Jack Johnson. Nothing but sympathy.
Kelly S. writes in, sad, how can parents take advantage of their child like this? How did the parents not stop to think 12% interest is insane? How did they not stop to think that 24% interest was insane? That was one of the loans they took out against Jack Johnson's contract. A 24% interest loan. What the fuck?
Well, the party's seen himself, wow, it could really pay off somewhere down there. I know. I can't wrap my head around it. Like, it's one thing for a player. Like, I've told this story before about what PK Subban did with his first contract. He bought his parents a house in King City, which is a little bit north of the city of Toronto. Really, really nice area. Bought his parents a house. That's what he did with his money. So listen, I owe them. They put me through. They paid for all this. They got up in the morning. I mean, they, you know, spent countless hours in bad rinks at ungodly hours drinking bad coffee so I could play in the NHL maybe one day. I feel I owe that to them. It's another thing to say, we did all this for our son. He owes us this, and we're taking it.
I know pimps in Manhattan that can give me better than 24%
loan. How do you know pimps in Manhattan?
Hey, so you've been to New York. You get everybody.
You've been in New York for 5 minutes, and you know pimps in Manhattan.
biggest little city in the world, they say. Lynette writes in, I feel bad for Jack, especially after that 3-game suspension. That must have really hurt. Your parents are supposed to be the first people you trust to have your best interests at heart. But on a more global note, I've always felt that both high schools and colleges should have required classes in financial management for every student. It should include banking, insurance, and basic credit handling. Your credit affects every aspect of your life. I agree. I wish I had that. I know dick about shit about credit and lending and things of that nature.
Yeah.
I mean, you learn as you go through life and, you know, put your name on a mortgage and stuff like that. But I did not. You're not taught that enough in school, I don't think, unless you're taking specific classes to that end in, like, economics.
You don't take care of the money in my family? My wife. Because she is responsible.
My wife?
My wife. She takes care of all of that. Like, honestly, if you ask me how much I actually made at the end of the year, I couldn't tell you. I have no idea. I have no clue. She takes care of all of it. All of our investments, everything. Property, whole deal. All of it.
Finally, in the reaction to this story, Kyle Evans. Team. The news about Jack Johnson sucks. I do like to play devil's advocate, so I wonder, did his parents actually have malicious intent? Could they have gotten misleading information from lenders looking to make a quick buck for them? Lots of them.
But the problems that arise from young professional athletes with large sums of money, the issue as a whole, fascinates me. I'm 22 years old, and I make an amount of money sufficient to pay my bills. But any of my counterparts in a given profession, sports league, start out making tenfold what I make. For a lot of them, it's the first time they've ever had real money. It's an issue, especially in the NHL, which I would wager has the lowest percentage of college-educated athletes out of the major North American professional sports, that they're much less likely to have taken a math class or financial class there. Many of these guys have been playing 60-plus games a year since they were 16. They've been living on schedules and travel similar to those professional athletes in age 16. What do you expect?
Here's my thought on that, and it's not wrong, because I don't think I can't get my head around this idea that they went in there to siphon this guy's money, like to just drain all of his money. I don't think there was that intent. But I'm just trying to put myself in the parents' shoes here. Like, if one of my kids hit it big in the NHL and, you know, pinned up a $25 million contract and said, "Dad, can you take care of this?" First of all, I'll say, your question really is, "Mom, can you take care of this?" But my second thought is, if I am going to take care of this money, I am only going to invest it in very conservative ways. I couldn't take gambles with it. To your point, Wish, I couldn't invest in anything that, you know, that's why you have to pay out to the tune of 24%. On the off chance that it may pay off large, I couldn't do that. It would be the most conservative, low-risk investments you've ever seen in your life. Because my biggest concern would be protect that nut. Protect that initial nut and make sure that's fine. And if you're going to grow it, it has to be conservative and grow it in a very, very small way. I couldn't swing for the fences with my kids' money. Essentially, is what I'm saying.
Right.
I couldn't.
Right.
Could you? Could you swing for the? If Vivian said, "Hey, no. Dad, can you hold this for me and take care of it, invest it?" Would you swing for the fence? Would you say, "Okay, but I can't take risks with your future."
No, it would go into like 0.1% growth CDs at my bank.
Here you go, hon. You can ride the Ferris wheel.
Yeah, 5 years later, she's like, "Dad, how did those investments turn out?" I'm like, "Good news. You have $10.
Yeah. 15 bucks is 15 bucks. Come on.
All right. Listen, folks, I got a boogie. But,
there you go.
Thanks to Portslam for a great show. You have the floor, sir, for your big announcement. All right. And I will see you guys on Monday.
All right. See you later, half miler. All right. There he goes, Greg Wyshynski from Puck Daddy and from the MVSW. Just really quick, and I won't bore you with any of this if you're not interested, but we're pleased to announce the birth of a new podcast. Yes, indeed, it is true. After how long did we start planning this thing? Like a year, I think, I've been talking about doing this. I'm going to be doing, starting next Wednesday, a junior hockey podcast with Sam Cosentino, and it is called Junior. Let me just officially send out the tweet. There we go. It is all done. It'll be weekly. It will not be in place of the MVSW podcast. I can already hear it already. Oh, fine, taking more time off MVSW. You know, I'm getting chimped on this. No, not at all. This will be in addition to on a Wednesday, which is a dead day for me. So I fill up my time with Junior Hockey Podcast. So starting next Wednesday, join me and Sam Cosentino, weekly CHL podcast called Junior, covering all three leagues, the QMJHL, the OHL, and the Western Hockey League. News, interviews, look backs with NHL players who played in Junior, and stories from CHL past, all with eyes to the MasterCard Memorial Cup in Quebec. Later on in 2015. So there you go. That's the announcement. It only took about a year to put it together. Oh, and guess who's playing the keyboards for it? That's right. Strength and conditioning coach for MVSW, Matt Brown. Come on down. We'll have a demo up, by the way. We did a demo over the past couple of days, me and Sam Cosentino. So we should have that up, Maddie. What do you think? Maybe today, maybe tomorrow. What do you think, bud?
Hoping by the latest tomorrow. If all else fails, Monday. But
spoken like a true professional. Maybe sort of hoping for.
It's going to come on a day that ends with a Y at some
really
point.
Good way to cover yourself there, Matt Brown. That's solid.
No, we're hoping tomorrow.
Yeah, and it'll be housed at sportsnet.ca and also available on iTunes. We should look at getting it on SoundCloud, too. Hey, Maddie? That's something we should look at.
SoundCloud would be good.
So
all,
there you go.
All those platforms.
Add another podcast to your podcast arsenal. Please to be downloading. Please to be listening if you're interested in CHL. And even if you're not, even if you want to hear NHL guys talk about their time in junior, we have that for you on the podcast. So starting next Wednesday, 1 hour podcast each and every week with me and Sam Cosentino called simply Junior. And there you go. So That's the updates on behalf of Greg Wyshynski, who is, you know, really going cheap on you today. How dare you leave early? Like, come on, wish. You never catch me doing that. We will be back on Monday for more MVSW love. And yes, the Littlest Hobo Friday trivia thingy. What do we call that again? That thing that I've tried to burn out of my brain? Game Show Friday. That is coming up. I swear. I swear it's coming up. I'll do the questions, and our contestant will get all of them right, and I'll be exposed as a Littlest Hobo fraud. You just watch. Thanks, everyone, for listening this week. Thanks, everybody, for downloading. We appreciate each and every download, because when you download it, think of it this way. Every time you download this podcast, much like in It's a Wonderful Life, an angel gets his or her wings. It's true. So if you're concerned with goodness in the world and making the world a better place and a safer place for democracy, ladies and gentlemen, download this podcast. We thank all of you for doing the download, doing the downloading of this podcast, and doing the listening and allowing me and Greg into your ears, whether you're working out, whether you're at home, whether you're not doing your work at work and listening instead, whether you're giggling over goofy things like shampooing baby bears and hologram Bill Masterton, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the puck. Enjoy whatever you do outside of pucking. And we'll talk to you again on Monday. Yeah, for more MVSW love. As Greg always says, bye. Thank you.